Hi, this is Regina Don Akers. I'm sitting alone in my room at the Rio All Suites Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas, Nevada. And this is right after the 2016 A Course in Miracles conference put on by the Community Miracles Center. They're the sponsors of the conference, sometimes annual, sometimes every other year. And I was a speaker at the conference this year. The theme for the conference this year was Change Your Mind, Change the World. And each of the speakers was asked to write a description related to that theme, highly related to that theme, and then teach that description. And that's what I did twice this weekend. And this morning while I was in meditation, it came to me to go ahead and give this talk one more time. Right here, sitting alone in my room for a recording. For anyone who was at the conference and would like to hear it again, or for anyone who was not at the conference and would like to hear it. And also for myself, because as I was in meditation today, the next step of clarity came regarding the talk that I gave twice. That next step of clarity was not said at the conference, and I wanted to pull it all together for myself along with that next step of clarity. So first of all, my description. The name of my talk this weekend was Still Your Mind and Change the World. And this was my description. When one looks at the world, many complex problems can be seen. The world we see includes appearances such as neglect, abuse, murder, poverty, thievery, torture, disease, intolerant, hatred, and more. Is it really right to ignore these appearances and expect them to go away? Can we take helpful, right action? If so, what is right action? And what adds to the manifestation of these appearances? These questions will be addressed with absolute clarity in this session so that you can discover exactly how to be a helpful presence in the world while realizing your ultimate release. And I think this weekend, when I was giving the talk, there were people in the room who were more concerned with being a helpful presence in the world. And some of them may have been least pleased with my talk. And then there were also those that were interested in realizing your ultimate release. And they may have been most pleased with my talk. Although this conference was a Course in Miracles conference, the book that I felt to rely on the most during my talk is a New English version of the Tao Te Ching. And actually, it's just the Tao Te Ching itself that I found helpful, but this version, this translation by Stephen Mitchell, is sometimes easier for Americans to read and contemplate. So I use this version. For people who don't know what the Tao Te Ching is, it's an ancient scripture believed to have been shared by a master named Lao Tzu. If I have my timeline correct, the Tao Te Ching is older than the Bible and older than the teachings of Buddha. So it's an ancient book. The Tao, for those who don't know what the Tao is, the Tao would be the equivalent of what A Course in Miracles might call the Father. Probably a really good English term for the Tao would be the Source. People also refer to it as the Absolute. So if I mention the Tao, this is what I'm talking about, the Father, the Source, Absolute Truth. And I'm going to begin by reading from, let's see, which chapter do I want to go to first? I think in my talk, I went to one chapter first, and in the other talk, I went to the other chapter first. I don't know, but I think today I will start with chapter 29 of the Tao Te Ching. And for those of you who don't know the Tao, each chapter is very short. The chapters could be one paragraph, four or five paragraphs, but not any longer than that. They're very, very short. And I'm not even going to read an entire chapter. I'm going to read the sentences or the lines that have the most to do with the point that is related to my description of the CMC conference. Now remember, my description mentions several appearances that we can see in the world. In fact, there's many more of these appearances than we're aware of. Although we see some of this on our news, and some of us may have experienced some of this directly in our lifetimes, we are not at all aware of how much of these appearances there are in the world. I don't know that we could handle it to be aware fully of how much pain and suffering there really is in the world. It would either drive us mad or wake us up. But with that said, here again is a small list of the types of appearances that are in the world. Neglect. Abuse. We could say both physical and emotional. Murder. Poverty. Thievery. Torture. Disease, intolerant hatred, and more. So the question that I asked the participants that came to my talk, the question I asked them was, how many of you would like to see these appearances disappear or help fix these appearances? And I think in my Friday night talk, nearly everyone rose their hands. In my Sunday morning talk, about two-thirds of the people rose their hands that they would like to do something to fix these appearances. And it was after asking that question that I went to the Tao Te Ching, chapter 29, and read this. Do you want to improve the world? I don't think it can be done. The world is sacred. It can't be improved. If you tamper with it, you'll ruin it. If you tamper with it, you'll ruin it. The image that I shared this weekend is the image of a pendulum. If you think of a pendulum when it's still, not moving at all, that still position is the Tao, or the Father, or the Source, untampered with, left alone. The still pendulum, the Tao, the Father, the Source, when it is not tampered with, is only capable of absolute goodness. And it's important to say that absolute goodness is not necessarily what a human may define as good. Because when we get into the human definitions or the human judgments of good and bad, that's when we begin to tamper with the pendulum, tamper with the world, as the Tao would say. And of course, as the Tao says, if you tamper with it, you'll ruin it. So that's when we begin to ruin it. That's when we begin to ruin it. So the still pendulum, untampered with, is only capable of absolute goodness. It has nothing else in it. Like A Course in Miracles would say, love has no opposite. That absolute goodness is synonymous with love. So let me make up a story. It is just a made-up story, but it will help make a point to show you how we tamper with absolute goodness, and that eventually results in these appearances such as neglect, abuse, murder, poverty, thievery, torture, disease, intolerant hatred, and more. Let's imagine that we are all in the Garden of Eden. And of course, the Garden of Eden is a perfect place. Just everything is perfect. The Garden of Eden comes about from the still pendulum. It's the absolute goodness. And in my story of the Garden of Eden, I'm not going to talk about the fruit tree. I have a different story I want to share. In the Garden of Eden, there are just beautiful, beautiful, beautiful flowers everywhere, with these vibrant, bright colors. And one day, we're walking amongst those beautiful flowers in the Garden of Eden, and we happen to notice a small, pale, yellow flower. Very pale. And it's not near as vibrant and colorful as all of the other flowers. And so we get this tiny mad idea that that flower would be better. It would be prettier. We could call it more good if it was a bright yellow flower instead of a pale yellow flower. This, by the way, is where we enter into judgment, where we step away from absolute goodness and into our concept of good, into our idea of good. But we see this pale yellow flower and we think that we can make it better. And because we're in the Garden of Eden and we're still very aware of our divineness, we have the power to just kind of point the finger and go, boop, you know, and make it vibrant. And so we point the finger and we go, boop, and we make it this beautiful, bright yellow flower. When we did that, we pushed the still pendulum to the right just a little. And what happens when you let go of a pendulum after pushing it? It swings back in the opposite direction to an equal degree. So if we call the right good, of course meaning our concept of good, our judgment of good, and we push that pendulum to the right, then it's going to swing back to the left to an equal degree, and the left then would be our concept of bad, our concept of problem, our concept of something that needs to be fixed. So because we've tampered with the world, we've tampered with the pendulum by changing the pale yellow flower to a bright red flower, into a bright yellow flower. And then the pendulum swings back to the left to an equal degree. We now have our first problem. And that problem is, in the Garden of Eden, we've never experienced rain. Rain doesn't come in the Bible story until Noah. There's just this dew, this really nice dew that comes in the early morning every day. And that dew is enough to water all of the plants. That's a part of the absolute goodness. But now that we've tampered with it, there's one plant. The dew is not enough. The daily dew is not watering that plant, and it's starting to get dry, and it's starting to shrivel. And while we're out walking in the garden one day, we notice this problem, this plant that isn't getting enough water. And so we have an idea. We figure out how to save this plant out of our good intentions. We don't want to do nothing and let the plant die. That seems bad. We want to fix the problem out of our good intentions. And there's a stream nearby, not far at all. So we can walk over to the stream, we can scoop up some water, and we can bring it back to the plant, and we can irrigate the plant. This is how we're going to fix the problem. And so we do that. We run over to the stream, we scoop up some water, we bring it back, and we irrigate the plant. And we even appear to solve the problem. The plant is coming back to life now. But you see, what we did without realizing it was we tampered again. We pushed the pendulum again. We pushed it this time a little further to the right. And so when we let go, it swings back a little further to the left. And now we discover an even bigger problem, which again, out of our good intentions, we engineer a way to fix. But in our fixing, we're tampering, and we push the pendulum even further to the right. so that it swings back even further to the left. Let me read from the Tao Te Ching, chapter 29 again. Do you want to improve the world? I don't think it can be done. The world is sacred. It can't be improved. If you tamper with it, you'll ruin it. When you look at the world today, and you see the problems that I listed in my description, neglect, abuse, murder, poverty, thievery, torture, disease, intolerant hatred, and more. You are looking at the problems that have come about through our attempts at goodness, through our trying to fix, through our pushing the pendulum. Now that pendulum is in wide, wide swings. And the amazing thing is, you know, the Tao Te Ching says the world is sacred. And you may look out at the world and say, how can a world with all of those appearances be sacred? But there's a couple of different ways. One, it's always in perfect balance. The world is never, ever, ever out of balance, just like a pendulum is never, ever, ever out of balance. Even if it's swinging really, really wide, very high on one side and very high on the other, the height on each side is equal, right? So it's in perfect balance. So for every goodness, again, our concept of goodness, there's an equal evil. For every drought, there is a flood, right? For everyone who is starving, there is someone else who is fat and has too much. Perfect balance. And the world is sacred is because no matter how much we tamper with it, we can never ruin that perfect balance. It will never, ever be out of balance. All we can do is create wider and wider swings of the balance. But we cannot ever knock it out of balance. The other way in which the world is sacred is that it is a perfect reflection of our ideas. For example, in the world today, as I sit here, which is April 2016, one of the greatest stories of what the Western world would call evil, one of the greatest stories of evil in the world is ISIS, the Islamic State of Iran and Syria. And of course, they're spreading beyond Iran and Syria. And ISIS is really the reflection of an idea that we all carry and that we all express possibly multiple times per day. And it is, you could call, an idea of goodness, the concept of goodness anyway. We all think we're right. We all think we're right when we express this idea ourselves. Or when we think it and believe it, even if we don't express it. And the idea is, I am right. You are wrong. And you should think like me. I remember my dad. My dad, who is a very good man. My dad used to say that the whole world would be better off if everyone thought like him. Well, that's what Isis thinks. Isis is the expression of, I am right, you are wrong, and you should think like me, meaning you would be better off. The world would be better off. We would all be better off if you think like me. That's a pushing of the pendulum, that thought, that belief, especially if we act on it. And because we all believe that, we all think we're right, right? The Course says, would you rather be right or happy? That's how much we all think we're right. Because we all think we're right, we're really pushing the pendulum with that belief into a wide, high swing. And it swings back and we get appearances like Isis. And of course, they're not the first. Hitler thought he was right too. Once upon a time, Catholicism, when it was killing the Muslims in the Crusades and killing the mystics, torturing and killing the mystics in the Dark Ages, right? That was the expression of I am right and you are wrong and you should think like me. So it happens over and over and over again. And then, of course, just like we saw the dry plant in the Garden of Eden as a problem that we could fix, obviously, we see Isis and Hitler, oh my gosh, as a problem that we can fix. And we do whatever we do, fight wars typically. Teach different ideologies also. But we do it for the purpose of fixing these horrible problems. But every time we do that, it's just like irrigating that plant in the Garden of Eden. We're pushing the pendulum. So sure, we can end Hitler's reign over Europe. And sure, one day we will end the problem of ISIS. It's not forever. But in doing so, we are tampering with it. We are pushing the pendulum. And it's going to swing right back in the opposite direction to an equal degree. And another problem of the same or greater magnitude will spring up, depending on how much effort we put into the fixing. We can put a lot of effort into healing diseases, and new ones will just be born. We can put a lot of effort into feeding the hungry, and another area will have a drought or governmental oppression or something that will lead to new hunger. The Tao Te Ching says, do you want to improve the world? I don't think it can be done. The world is sacred. It can't be improved. If you tamper with it, you'll ruin it. If you tamper with it, you'll ruin it. If you tamper with it, you'll ruin it. So what's the answer? The answer is for each and every one of us to become, to embody to be the still pendulum. We be still in the face of what we perceive as problems. Let me read another chapter from the Tao Te Ching to you, or at least another portion of another chapter. This is chapter 41. And again, I'm only going to read the first part. It's all that really applies directly to my talk today. When a superior man hears of the Tao, he immediately begins to embody it. Let me read that again, maybe two or three times. When a superior man hears of the Tao, he immediately begins to embody it. That would be the teaching that I just shared, that when we attempt to fix things, to make them better, we are tampering with the world, we are pushing the pendulum, and it will swing back in the opposite direction to an equal degree. The superior man then, when he or she hears this teaching, immediately begins to embody it by at once stopping and being still in the face of everything. No longer trying to fix. No longer trying to achieve good. The superior man begins to just be and allows everything else to be as it is, without interference. And this works. The reason this works, again, if you imagine the image of a pendulum, when you're pushing the pendulum, it's swinging. And as I said, in the world now, it's in very, very wide swings. But what happens if you stop pushing a pendulum? If you get out of it, right, and just let the pendulum swing. I mean, for a time, it still swings, right, because it's in motion. But then it begins to slow, doesn't it? And if you just continue to leave it alone, just continue to stay out of the way, eventually, that pendulum slows and slows and slows until it comes to a stop. In that stop, there is no more interference. In that stop, we are back to the absolute goodness of the Source. So when the superior man hears the teaching of the Tao, the superior man immediately begins to embody it, stops all interference, and becomes still. Let me start with chapter 41 again, and this time I'll read a little further. When a superior man hears of the Tao, he immediately begins to embody it. When an average man hears of the Tao, he half believes it, half doubts it. And I would say that's the average person on the spiritual path, the average man. Half believes it, So sometimes in the face of problems, maybe in the face of like a grievance, you know, you choose to be still, you choose to let go of it. We call that forgiveness in the Course community, right? But then there may be other problems like, I don't have enough money, or my lover is leaving me. That problem seems more important, too big to just let go of. I have to fix it. And so then we get back into pushing the pendulum again. And so that's the average man. Under some circumstances, you know, I can say, okay, I can see how I should not interfere with that, and so I will be still. But then other circumstances seem too important in our judgment, or even too threatening in our judgment. And we feel to be still is it's just not, it's not going to cut it. And so we get involved and we start pushing the pendulum again. And remember, I mentioned that if you stop pushing a pendulum completely, eventually it does still swing for a while because it's already in motion. But eventually it comes to a stop. It becomes still again. But if you're the average man, and sometimes, sure, you don't push it and it does begin to slow down, but then something comes along that really frightens you and you rush out to fix it and you start pushing it again, you can do that forever and ever and ever, and the pendulum will never return to still. So that's probably something for us to look at. It's probably worthwhile asking, do I want to be the superior man or the average man? I'll just tell you something that happened to me yesterday. I'm going to get my phone so I can read it to you immediately. I called my boyfriend of 25 years. And I've been away from home for about a week now. And I came on this trip alone. I drove on this trip alone as a retreat, stopped in some beautiful places and hiked. I also went to see a spiritual teacher whose teachings I really value. I went and saw him Wednesday. His name is Michael Langford. Interviewed him. And the day that I told my boyfriend about that, I heard something in his voice. And actually, for the next 2 days, when I called, he didn't answer the phone. And then after a couple days, he answered the phone again. So, you know, and everything just seemed normal. But then yesterday, after the conference, when I called him, I could definitely hear something in his voice. He didn't admit to anything. You know, I asked him if he was tired, and he said, yeah, sort of. And, you know, we chatted for a few minutes. He asked me about the conference, and I told him that I was going out to dinner with my brother. My brother is in Vegas also, and we went out to dinner last night. Actually, his plane was late. We didn't have time for dinner. We just went to a show. But I was telling him about that. And then we hung up the phone. And after we hung up the phone, a couple of minutes later, I got a text from my boyfriend that says, I think I'm going to take a break for a while. This is my boyfriend of 25 years. I texted him back just to make sure I wasn't misunderstanding, although I immediately thought of Friends and what are their names? I can't think of the characters, but they took a break. They broke up is what it meant. I wrote back and I said, what do you mean? And he didn't answer right away, but then he said, I just need some time. And so I texted back and I said, is that what I heard in your voice? And he didn't answer. And so after a time, I just said, okay, you don't have to answer. I love you. He wrote back and said, I don't feel like you do. And of course, I know this is his imagination just because I'm away. Maybe because I'm in Las Vegas, you know, and it has that reputation that Las Vegas has. Maybe because I went to see this spiritual teacher and I was alone all day with a male spiritual teacher. That seems to be when it began, maybe all of this together. So what does one do when their boyfriend of 25 years is imagining something and it's causing him to consider ending the relationship? Well, I can tell you what I would have done, 15 years ago. I would have called and, had intense conversation with him with the purpose of explaining that he's wrong, And I would talk until, if possible, I got him to see it my way. Because this, in the eyes of the person, is important. This is one of the two most important relationships in my life, my daughter and my 25-year-old boyfriend. But what does the superior man do? He does not interfere. He allows this to be whatever it is. And so I ended up texting him and saying something like, I will give you this time to yourself. And of course, as I said here now, I don't yet know. But whatever it turns out to be, I trust it. Completely. Because if we do not interfere with the world, its sacredness becomes more apparent. Not my concept of what should happen. My concepts could actually go either way, that it would be better if we stay together. But, on another day, another hour, my concepts, my thinking mind could say, oh, it'd be better if he does break up with me. What if I stand in the middle of those two concepts? They're just different sides of the pendulum, right? What if I stand in the middle of those two concepts? And just trust the stillness. Just trust the absolute sacredness of the world. And however this situation turns out, to know that is the manifestation of the absolute goodness. Or to put it in the language of A Course in Miracles, that's what's in my best interest, whatever is provided. Let me return to the Tao Te Ching, chapter 41. When a superior man hears of the Tao, he immediately begins to embody it. When a superior man hears of the Tao, he immediately begins to embody it. When an average man hears of the Tao, he half believes it, half doubts it. When a foolish man hears of the Tao, he laughs out loud or gets angry. Whenever I give this talk, there are always people who get angry, and there were, as far as I could tell, approximately two people Friday night and approximately two people Sunday morning who got angry. And And that's because they believe so much, if I don't fix things, there will be chaos. I have to fix things. Listen to this. There cannot be goodness without me. That's really the thought. And who is that me? It's the ego, the self-will, the tamperer. It is the one who is pushing the pendulum, which is why the Tao calls that one the foolish man. That one has no idea of the divine law. That one does not realize, left alone, the Father can take care of all things. You know, what makes you think that the Father, the Source, the Tao, needs your help? Right? I think the Course says something like the ego thinks it's God, or the ego wanted to usurp, is that how you say it? Usurp the power of God? That's what's in you that wants to fix things. That's what's in you that gets angry, if you feel that anger, at these teachings. It's the ego. And the Tao calls that the foolish man. Foolish. Foolish. Because that's exactly what's creating the problems. That's exactly what makes the appearances of neglect, abuse, murder, poverty, thievery, torture, disease, intolerant hatred, and more. Every time we try to fix these things, we push the pendulum. It swings back in the opposite direction to an equal degree in order to maintain balance. All right, if it sounds like there's a bit of a change here, it's because the phone rang. It was David Fishman and I answered it. So I paused the recording for a moment and now I am back. So there is a bit of a change here. But yes, I think I was probably saying something like, the foolish man doesn't realize that in his or her attempts to fix, he is pushing the pendulum. It's swinging back to the equal and opposite degree, and the absolute balance of his intended goodness is matched with unintended evil or badness or wrongness or problems, right? I also, in my talk this weekend, talked about this isn't just our actual efforts to fix. It's not just what we do that pushes the pendulum, but also our thinking, just our thinking in general. You know, if I'm sitting and watching the news and, you know, right now we have the presidential election running on and we have people like Donald Trump and Ted Cruz and Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders, they're the four biggest ones, all sharing what will solve the problems. And if I'm agreeing with one or two and strongly disagreeing with one or two in my mind, not even telling anyone, just letting the thinking happen, that is also the believing of that thinking. The putting my interest, my passion into that thinking is also pushing the pendulum. So when we talk about the stillness, we're talking about absolute stillness. We're not only talking about not doing things about the problems in the world that we perceive or in our relationships, but not even thinking about them. So like with my boyfriend, to have not responded in text, but then to have gone on and in my mind let it spin and spin and spin, whatever thoughts I would have about what he should do, that would still be the same error. So for me, I need to, you know, let the problem go and let it work itself out and just trust whatever is happening, even though right now I don't know what that is. Whatever is happening, just trust it. It has to be absolute stillness, body and mind. And a lot of people don't know how to be still in the mind because we're very, very addicted to the spinning of that thinking. And not only that, the mind tells us, the mind is the foolish man, right? The mind is the ego. And so the mind tells us that it will solve our problems. The mind, in its own way, is constantly telling us, I am your savior. And if we believe the mind is our savior, we'll continue to be the foolish man and we'll continue to push the pendulum. And sure, we solve some problems, but then new ones are created. You know, there's just no end to that swinging back and forth as long as we stay involved. So we need to learn to become still, both in mind and body. And at some point, I promise you, this becoming still is easy and even natural. It becomes natural again because it was once natural and peaceful and blissful. And it feels oh so right to just be still and let everything else do as it does while that pendulum slows down its swinging motion. But in the beginning, that's not true. In the beginning, we are highly addicted to the mind, and so we need some tools to help us be still. And so the tool I introduced this weekend, which if you've heard my teachings before, you know this tool. It's not new. It's rest, accept, and trust. And actually, you know, in the story with my boyfriend right now, the rest and the accept is happening boom, boom, naturally, and the trust, boom, naturally. You see, I said I'm trusting whatever is happening. Right, rest, accept, and trust. Boom, boom, boom. But for a lot of people, it's not natural. It's not boom, boom, boom. So they need to work at it. So let me just talk a little bit about rest, accept, and trust. Rest means rest the mind. Because like I said, the thinking, the giving our attention to the spinning of the mind is still pushing the pendulum, even if physically we're doing nothing. So we need to rest the mind. And at some point we can tell the mind, basically, we can make a decision, I just don't want to think about that, and boom, we're done with it. But again, in the beginning, that's not true. And so you can practice what I call active resting. Active resting of the mind is talking to yourself silently in thought with helpful coaching, helpful self-talk in a very active way. Because while your attention is on the helpful self-talk, your attention is not on the spinning. So let me demonstrate some of that helpful self-talk, but for the audio, I will say that someone recently asked me a question about what are some of the things I used to say to myself during this phase of my awakening. And I went into a deep contemplation, and several of the sentences I used to use came back to me. I wrote them down. They're posted on my website under the More menu. There's a menu that's just M-O-R-E, More, and then Articles, More Articles. And you'll find the helpful self-talk there if you want to look at it. But let me just demonstrate some now. So usually if my mind was spinning, let's pretend like I'm, you know, thinking of all these things that I should say to my boyfriend to convince him to do, you know, whatever it is I want him to do. Or maybe if I want him to leave, I'm already planning my life without him, planning how the things I'll pack up and give to him and, you know, get out, you know, whatever, whichever side it's on in the moment. Anyway, so let's pretend like this is happening. And I recognize that as the spinning, the chatter, the pushing of the pendulum. And I want to be still. Here's what I would do. I would start with saying to myself, breathe. Breathe.
all of this chatter is just the ego. All of this chatter does not know. All of this chatter does not know what is in my best interest. I have no interest in listening to this chatter. I want awakening. I want healing. I do not know what is in my best interest for awakening. I will not listen to the mind. The mind will deceive me and will make me think that I need to take control in some way, or that I need a specific outcome in some way, that I cannot be happy, I cannot be secure unless I listen to the mind and do what it says. The mind wants me to defend me. Defend my imagined best interests. If I defend myself, I am attacked. If I push the pendulum, it will swing back in the opposite direction to an equal degree. I need do nothing. Breathe. Be still. Stay here. Allow this. Trust all things. This too shall pass. Etc. And as I talk to myself with this kind of helpful self-talk, this helpful coaching, it allows me to not get mentally or physically involved in fixing things, trying to manipulate things so that they go my way, which of course is pushing the pendulum. That's rest the mind, rest, accept, and trust is the entire process. So let's move to the accept. We rest the mind and then we accept how we feel. Most people do not like to feel negative emotions. Fear, unworthiness, guilt, hatred, jealousy, etc. And so they do whatever they can, whatever reasoning can happen in the mind, or whatever manipulation can happen in the world. They do whatever they can to get rid of the bad feelings as soon as possible. Of course, that is pushing the pendulum. But in addition, that is repression. And anything that you repress or press down inside of yourself, you aren't getting rid of. You're keeping it. You're really achieving the opposite of what you intend to do. Let me see if I can find another chapter of the Tao. Yesterday, when I was actually physically teaching these things, I had these folded down, but now I don't. I'll tell you what I can do, though. I can pause the recording while I look for the right chapter. All right, I found it. Chapter 36 of the Tao Te Ching. If you want to shrink something, you must first allow it to expand. If you want to get rid of something, you must first allow it to flourish. So if I want to get rid of my bad feelings, in order to honestly get rid of them, which really means heal, I have to allow them to expand and allow them to flourish.
If I try to get rid of them by getting rid of them as soon as I can, by repressing them, I'm actually not getting rid of them, I'm keeping them.
So you allow that feeling of hatred, that feeling of guilt, that feeling of fear. You allow it to be. You allow it to expand. You allow it to flourish. And then it dies. You know, you might think of the image of a flower, right? A flower starts as a bud. And then the flower blooms and it gets big, 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 big. You know, think of this flower blooming as your guilt seems to be getting bigger. Your fear is getting bigger. Your jealousy is getting bigger. And you're just watching it, right? But it's getting bigger and rushing through your body and you feel it everywhere. Imagine this flower. The flower gets completely big. It reaches its biggest open point. And then the flower begins to die. A natural death. That's the honest getting rid of. It takes more time. It takes more patience. It takes more trust. The honest getting rid of is healing. And healing leads to awakening. So accept means accept how you feel. Allow it to expand. Allow it to flourish. Also, you also need to accept the situation, whatever the perceived problem is. And accept however the universe works it out. Imagine yourself as the still pendulum. Be the superior man who embodies this immediately, not the average man who half believes it and half doubts it. Remember that if you tamper with it, you will ruin it. The pendulum will continue to swing. There will never be an exit from problems. There will never be absolute freedom. Be still in body and mind. This is what rest and accept allows. And then the real root, the real foundation of rest, accept, is trust. Trust this is healing. Trust that without your interference, the universe does know what to do. The Tao, the Father, the Source. It does know what's in the best interest of all. Trust that your only role in absolute goodness is to be still. Trust that your only role in true healing is to be still. And also trust that your best is good enough for now. Because as we're learning to be still, in the beginning there is a lot of wavering. And you don't want to judge yourself for all of your wavering. You know, think of a child, a baby, learning to walk. They don't just get up and walk someday, right? They stand up and fall down and stand up and fall down. And eventually they're taking a step and falling down. But then one day they're taking 4 or 5 steps before they fall down. And one day everybody walks. Right? So even your wavering, don't get upset about that. Don't judge that. Trust that your best today is enough. Think of the child who, as they do their best, eventually they are walking perfectly. Your best today is enough, and eventually you will be able to just tell your mind, I don't want to think about that, or tell your mind, be still, and it will. As the old saying goes, if you do your best gets better. That's true. So rest, accept, and trust. Those are the training wheels that will teach you how to ride the bike of stillness. So let me just kind of review the chapters from the Tao that I've read so far, and then maybe if something else doesn't come, I will go into the clarity that came this morning during the meditation, kind of the addition to this teaching. Oh, let me say one more thing, though. Both Friday night and Sunday morning, and probably now, although you're not in my physical proximity, so I can't see it. But there are some people, again, maybe two out of, I don't know how many people are in the room, I would guess 50 to 75. So two out of 50 to 75, it seemed, really wanted to get to the action. They wanted to ask the question, you know, you're sitting here teaching us to be still, do nothing, but action has to happen. Action always happens in the world. And there's a truth to that, but I got to say, that when people want to jump to the action too quickly, when they want my permission to act, that is still the ego. It is true. It is true that if you learn to be still, if you learn to be in absolute acceptance of everything, if you learn to see the world as perfect as it is, even with neglect, abuse, murder, poverty, thievery, torture, disease, intolerant hatred, really, if you learn to honestly allow that and nothing in you is being triggered, the absolute goodness of the stillness of the Tao will move that body that appears to be yours to do things in the world. But that can't be your focus. That can't be your concern. If you let that doing be your focus, be your concern, you will act out of your judgment of what needs to be fixed. You will push the pendulum. If you want to be the truly helpful presence in the world, the truly helpful presence that is not pushing the pendulum at all, not causing any new additional problems at all, then your only concern must be the stillness. And then if movement happens, you will know that it's happening and it is not from you. You'll know the difference, trust me. When your mind starts saying, but action has to happen, say, yeah, 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 but my job is to be focused on the stillness. If you read my books, one of them is called The Holy Spirit's Interpretation of the New Testament. And if you read NTI, 1 Corinthians, it talks about the empty shell. That is the same thing. The empty shell embodying the still pendulum are the same. That's to be your focus. Please do not become confused, because when you become focused on action, you start pushing the pendulum again. All right, let me review what I've read from the Tao. First, starting with chapter 29. Do you want to improve the world? I don't think it can be done. The world is sacred. It can't be improved. If you tamper with it, you'll ruin it. If you tamper with it, you'll ruin it. A Course in Miracles says God did not create this world. So what does make these appearances? If not God, what? Our tampering. Our trying to achieve goodness. our trying to achieve better, our trying to achieve what we need for our security. And it's our trying to achieve that is the tampering that ruins it. We have to get out of the way. Trust that God, the Father, the Source, the Absolute, the Tao, does not need us taking control to make things right. We are the problem. A Course in Miracles says the miracle worker's only responsibility is to accept the atonement for himself. The word atonement means correction. That means we're making a mistake. We wouldn't need a correction if we weren't making a mistake. The mistake has been clearly explained in this audio, as well as the correction. We need to let go of pushing the pendulum. Let go of trying to achieve right in our judgment. A Course in Miracles says the miracle worker's only responsibility is to accept the atonement for himself. Highlight this time the word miracle worker. How are these miracles achieved? How does absolute goodness return? By us doing nothing, by us being still. By us getting our self out of it. Taking our hands off of the pendulum. That's how the miracle is achieved. God, the universe, the source, the Tao, the Father, it can take care of the miracles all by itself. It doesn't need us to decide where miracles need to happen, right? A Course in Miracles also says that all miracles should be under, what is it, the control of Christ consciousness, something like that. But what it also says is if we are selecting where miracles need to happen, if we are choosing the miracles, it tells us that can be, are you ready for this, severely misguided. All control should be under Christ's consciousness, Christ's control. If we go deciding what needs to be fixed, if we go deciding where miracles need to happen, that can be severely misguided. In other words, we're pushing the pendulum. We're being the foolish man, and we don't even know it. The miracle worker. So you do work miracles through this process. By doing nothing, you work miracles. The miracle worker's only responsibility is to accept the atonement, the correction for himself. The superior man, when he hears of the Tao, embodies it immediately. Chapter 29, one more time. Do you want to improve the world? I don't think it can be done. The world is sacred. It can't be improved. If you tamper with it, you'll ruin it. And then, of course, chapter 41, which I just pointed to a moment ago. When a superior man hears of the Tao, he immediately begins to embody it. Immediately. When an average man hears of the Tao, he half believes it, half doubts it. When a foolish man hears of the Tao, he laughs out loud. On Friday night at the conference, I didn't get around to it for some reason on Sunday morning. Of course, it doesn't matter. On Sunday morning, the books were already sold out. So, but on Friday night at the conference, I told people that they could get the teachings of Inner Ramana. And it would help them learn to live in this world without thinking. In other words, it would help them to live in this world while being the still pendulum. And that's because the teachings of Inner Ramana teaches three tools that we can use that tune us into intuition more. And therefore, we feel less and less dependent on the thinking mind. The three tools are, the first one is surrender. And I want to end this audio soon, so I won't go into this as much as I did Friday night. But surrender is learning how to live on intuition instead of live on the mind. Or live by the mind. And in the teachings of Inner Ramana, it teaches us to ask, what am I to do now? And in that, there are several other questions automatically embedded. We don't have to remember the other questions. We only remember, what am I to do now? And we get an intuitive guidance in response to the question that tells us how to see the situation, how to be in this present moment, what to say if anything is to be said, what to do if anything is to be done. And if we learn to ask that question, what am I to do now? And we learn to follow it, the intuition that comes completely, then we're able to also fully step outside of the spinning, chattering, thinking mind and still get by in the world just fine. The second tool that is taught in the teachings of Inner Ramana is a mantra. It's I am that I am. And the book teaches you exactly how to practice the mantra so that whenever you catch yourself, you know, just daydreaming, your mind is spinning on some story, you can use the mantra, I am that I am, to transition from the spinning mind to the silence, to the stillness. And then the third tool that is taught in the teachings of Inner Ramana is self-inquiry. And self-inquiry helps you see, because we have this idea that it's me. Like if the mind was spinning about the boyfriend and about, you know, how life is not going to be good without him if he chooses to leave. If I was completely untrained, I would think, that's me. I don't want him to leave, right? That's how we would word it. I don't want him to leave. Well, self-inquiry is a practice that helps you see that it's not you, it's just the mind chatter. The mind is chattering about not wanting him to leave right now. And self-inquiry also helps you to see that you are not that mind. You are the awareness that is watching. In other words, you are naturally still. And as you practice self-inquiry more and more, what seems to happen is that you're attachment to the mind that makes you think that's me, it begins to die. It begins to weaken. And then that awareness that you really are, that naturally still awareness, seems to come forward from somewhere in the background. and you become more and more aware that you are awareness. You become more and more naturally still, as yourself, abiding as yourself, regardless of what appears to be happening on the world scene. The teachings of Inner Ramana is a very thin book. There's very little teaching or theory in it, only enough to explain the practices. It's the practices themselves that are important. And I honestly believe that if you get this book and live this book, be the superior man who embodies the practices in this book immediately. Although you may read other books because you enjoy them, you will never need another book. This book will take you all the way into being your natural still self. The teachings of Inner Ramana. R-A-M-A-N-A. The teachings of Inner Ramana. And now let me go into the clarity that came during meditation today. And then I can end this and get dressed and start my drive home to Colorado from Las Vegas. Because it's getting late and I do have to check out today. Yeah, I have an hour before checkout time. So in my meditation today, the image of the movie projected onto the movie screen came. I need to be real still because the image came and of course the mind wants to forget it, and that's why I wanted to do the recording, is so it could get recorded before it was forgotten. But now I need to be still. It's already nearly forgotten. So the image of the movie being projected on the movie screen came. The movie screen represents what we really are, the naturally still consciousness. Only we aren't just naturally still consciousness, we're also life itself. I often call it isness. So this movie screen is alive. And the sleeping movie screen, I'll call it. The sleeping movie screen sees the character projected on it, and it mistakenly thinks it's the character. It forgets it's the movie screen. It thinks it's the character. And it thinks whatever is happening to the character is happening to it. If there's a fire, it's my fire and my house burning down and my body is in danger and, you know, I gotta do something. It's my panic, right? It thinks all of this. The movie screen, that's the sleeping movie screen. It fully believes it is the character that's projected on it. The movie screen that is in the process of awakening is trying to remember that it is the movie screen, and that it is not touched by anything that happens in the movie, no matter how close that seems, the movie. And so the movie screen that is trying to awaken to the realization that it's just the screen and not the character, you know, it has this, it's in this struggle period where sometimes it gets pulled back into thinking it's the character, and sometimes it remembers to practice being the screen, embodying being the screen. Stillness represents embodying being the screen because the screen is still. And so the one who is embodying being the screen, practicing awakening, we call it. As the movie continues, as the drama continues, and this is a 4D movie, so we feel all of the emotions, right? As all of that continues, that one just bees still It bees the movie screen and lets the movie continue to play. It's practicing being itself. It sounds silly because it is itself, but it's practicing being itself because it's so tempted to get into the drama of the film again. So it practices being the movie screen. It practices being still even while the movie continues. Now, that was all just a prelude to the clarity that came today. In my description for the CMC conference, I said that you can discover exactly how to be a helpful presence in the world, which was being still and not pushing the pendulum. But my description went on to read, you can discover exactly how to be a helpful presence in the world while realizing your ultimate release. While realizing your ultimate release. Your ultimate release is remembering that you are the movie screen. So the way you do that is no matter what's happening in the movie, no matter what's happening in the movie, you be still. As you be still, you not only come to the point where you no longer identify with the character, but actually this movie, as it turns out, was always coming from your life being breathed into the image. And so as you sit still, as you are not a part of the film, as the pendulum slows, the movie actually begins to fade. It begins to go out. Any part of you that still thinks in some way that I'm that character on the screen, when the movie is just about to fade for the final time, there may be a panic, a reaching out for the character. This is the most important time of all to remember that you are the movie screen. Do not reach out for that character or you will re-enliven the movie. The projector will start going again. The pendulum will start swinging again. Allow the movie to die. Allow the movie to end. This is the ego death. This is the final doorway. You can actually look that up on the internet. Look for the final doorway, Dr. David Hawkins. And you'll see a little 4 or 5 minute clip on YouTube of him talking about this experience of allowing the ego death. The final doorway, by Dr. David Hawkins. Be still, be the screen, be who you are. Even as the panic arises, watch that as the last scene in the movie. Be still. The movie fades. The character disappears. And then it's obvious that you are the movie screen. You never were the character. In fact, there never actually was a character. It was just an appearance. There never was a world. There never was all of that drama. This is awakening. And the way you awaken is by being still. So begin to practice now with whatever your perceived problems are. Be the movie screen. Let the movie play. Stop pushing the pendulum. Let the pendulum swing until it stops on its own. Abide as yourself. Be the superior man. Embody this teaching immediately until you realize your ultimate release.